Chapter 58. For some rhyme Vinicius had spent his nights away from home. It occurred to Petronius that perhaps he had formed a new plan and was working to liberate Lygia from the Esquiline dungeon. He did not wish, however, to inquire about anything, lest he might bring misfortune to the work. This skeptical exquisite had become in a certain sense superstitious. He had failed to snatch Lygia from the Mamertan prison, hence had ceased to believe in his own star. Besides, he did not count this time on a favorable outcome for the efforts of Vinicius. The Esquiline prison, formed in a hurry from the cellars of houses thrown down to stop the fire, was not, it is true, so terrible as the old Tullianum near the capital, but it was 100 times better guarded. Petronius understood perfectly that Lygia had been taken there only to escape death, and not escape the amphitheater. He could understand at once that for this very reason they were guarding her as a man guards the eye in his head. Evidently, said he to himself, Caesar and Tigellinus have reserved her for some special spectacle, more dreadful than all others, and Vinicius is more likely to perish than rescue her. Vinicius, too, had lost hope of being able to free Lygia. Christ alone could do that. The young tribune now thought only of seeing her in prison. For some time the knowledge that Nazarius had penetrated the Mamertan prison as a corpse-bearer had given him no peace, hence he resolved to try that method also. The overseer of the Putrid Pits, who had been bribed for an immense sum of money, admitted him at last among servants whom he sent nightly to prisons for corpses. The danger that Vinicius might be recognized was really small. He was preserved from it by night, the dress of a slave, and the defective illumination of the prison. Besides, into whose head could it enter that a patrician, the grandson of one consul, the son of another, could be found among servants, corpse bearers, exposed to the miasma of prisons and the Putrid Pits? And he began work to which men were forced only by slavery or the direst need. When the desired evening came, he girded his loins gladly, covered his head with a cloth steeped in turpentine, and with throbbing heart betook himself, with a crowd of others, to the Esquian. The Praetorian guards made no trouble, for all had brought proper tessery, which the centurion examined by the light of a lantern. After a while the great iron doors opened before them, and they entered. Vinicius saw an extensive vaulted cellar, from which they passed to a series of others. Dim tapers illuminated the interior of each, which was filled with people. Some of these were lying at the walls sunk in sleep, or dead, perhaps. Others surrounded large vessels of water, standing in the middle, out of which they drank as people tormented with fever. Others were sitting on the grounds, their elbows on their knees, their heads on their palms. Here and there children were sleeping, nestled up to their mothers. Groans, loud hurried breathing of the sick, weeping, whispered prayers, hymns in an undertone, the curses of overseers were heard round about it. In this dungeon was the odor of crowds and corpses. In its gloomy depth dark figures were swarming. Near, close to flickering lights, were visible faces, pale, terrified, hungry, and cadaverous, with eyes dim, or else flaming with fever, with lips blue, with streams of sweat on their foreheads, and with clammy hair. In corners the sick were moaning loudly. Some begged for water, others, to be led to death. And still that prison was less terrible than the old Tullianum. The legs bent under Vinicius, when he saw all this, and breath was failing in his breast. At the thought that Lygia was in the midst of this misery and misfortune, the hair rose on his head, and he stifled a cry of despair. The amphitheater, the teeth of wild beasts, the cross, anything was better than those dreadful dungeons filled with the odor of corpses, places in which imploring voices called from every corner, "Let us to death." Vinicius pressed his nails into his palms, for he felt that he was growing weak, and that presence of mind was deserting him. All that he had felt till then, all his love and pain, changed in him to one desire for death. Just then near his side was heard the overseer of the Putrid Pits, "How many corpses have ye today?" About a dozen, answered the guardian of the prison, but there will be more before morning. Some are in agony at the walls. And he fell to complaining of women who concealed dead children so as to keep them near and not yield them to the putrid pits. We must discover corpses first by the odor. Through this the air, so terrible already, is spoiled still more. I would rather be a slave in some rural prison than guard these dogs rotting here, while alive, the overseer of the pits comforted him, saying that his own service was no easier. By this time the sense of reality had returned to Vinicius. He began to search the dungeon, but sought in vain for Lygia, fearing meanwhile that he would never see her alive. A number of cellars were connected by newly made passages. The corpse bearers entered only those from which corpses were to be carried. Fear seized Vinicius lest that privilege which had cost so much trouble might serve no purpose. Luckily his patron aided him. Infection spreads most through corpses, said he. Why ye must carry out the bodies at once, or die yourselves, together with the prisoners. There are only 10 of us for all the cellars, said the guardian, and we must sleep. I will leave 4 men of mine, who will go through the cellars at night to see if these are dead. We will drink tomorrow, if thou do that. Everybody must be taken to the test, for an order has come to pierce the neck of each corpse, and then to the putrid pits at once with it. Very well, but we will drink, said the overseer. 4 men were selected, and among them Vinicius. The others he took to put the corpses on the biers. Vinicius was at rest. He was certain now at least of finding Lygia. The young tribune began by examining the first dungeon carefully. He looked into all the dark corners hardly reached by the light of his torch. He examined figures sleeping at the walls under coarse cloths. He saw that the most grievously ill were drawn into a corner apart. But Lygia he found in no place. In a second and third dungeon his search was equally fruitless. Meanwhile the hour had grown late. All corpses had been carried out. The guards, disposing themselves in the corridors between cellars, were asleep. The children, wearied with crying, were silent. Nothing was heard save the breathing of troubled breasts, and here and there the murmur of prayer. Vinicius went with his torch to the fourth dungeon, which was considerably smaller. Raising the light, he began to examine it, and trembled all at once, for it seemed to him that he saw, near a latticed opening in the wall, the gigantic form of Ursus. Then, blowing out the light, he approached him, and asked, Ursus, art thou here? Who art thou? Asked the giant, turning his head. Dost not know me? Thou hast quenched the torch, how could I know thee? But at that moment Vinicius saw Lygia lying on a cloak near the wall, so, without speaking further, he knelt near her. Ursus recognized him, and said, Praise be to Christ, but do not wake her, Lord. Vinicius, kneeling down, gazed at her through his tears. In spite of the darkness he could distinguish her face, which seemed to him as pale as Allah. Baster, and her emaciated arms. At that sight he was seized by a love which was like a rending pain, a love which shook his soul to its uttermost depth, and which at the same time, was so full of pity, respect, and homage that he fell on his face, and pressed to his lips the hem of the cloak on which rested that head dearer to him than all else on earth. Ursus looked at Vinicius for a long time in silence, but at last he pulled his tunic. Lord, asked he, how didst thou come, and hast thou come here to save her? Vinicius rose, and struggled for a time with his emotion. Show me the means, replied he. I thought that thou wouldst find them, Lord. Only one method came to my head. Here he turned toward the grating in the wall, as if in answer to himself, and said, In that way but there are soldiers outside, 100 praetorians. Then we cannot pass? No. The legion rubbed his forehead, and asked again, How didst thou enter? I have a tassir from the overseer of the putrid pits. Apostrophe then Vinicius stopped suddenly, as if some idea had flashed through his head. By the passion of the Redeemer, said he, in a hurried voice, I will stay here. Let her take my Tisira. She can wrap her head in a cloth, cover her shoulders with a mantle, and pass out. Among the slaves who carry out corpses there are several youths not full grown. Hence the Praetorians will not notice her, and once at the house of Petronius she is safe. But the Lycian dropped his head on his breast, and said, he would not consent, for she loves thee. Besides, she is sick, and unable to stand alone. If thou and the noble Petronius cannot save her from prison, who can? Said he, after a while. Christ alone. Then both were silent. Christ could save all Christians, thought the Lycian, in his simple heart. But since he does not save them, it is clear that the hour of torture and death has come. He accepted it for himself, but was grieved to the depth of his soul for that child who had grown up in his arms, and whom he loved beyond life. Vinicius knelt again near Lygia. Through the grating in the wall moonbeams came in, and gave better light than the one candle burning yet over the entrance. Lygia opened her eyes now, and said, placing her feverish hand on the arm of Vinicius, I see thee, I knew that thou wouldst come. He seized her hands, pressed them to his forehead and his heart, raised her somewhat, and held her to his breast. I have come, dearest. May Christ guard and free thee, beloved Lygia. He could say no more, for the heart began to whine in his breast from pain and love, and he would not show pain in her presence. I am sick, Marcus, said Lygia, and I must die either on the arena, or here in prison. I have prayed to see thee before death. Thou hast come, Christ has heard me. Unable to utter a word yet, he pressed her to his bosom, and she continued. I saw thee through the window in the Tullianum. I saw that thou hadst the wish to come to me. Now the Redeemer has given me a moment of consciousness, so that we may take farewell of each other. I am going to him, Marcus, but I love thee, and shall love always. Vinicius conquered himself. He stifled his pain, and began to speak in a voice which he tried to make calm. No, dear Lygia, thou wilt not die. The apostle commanded me to believe, and he promised to pray for thee. He knew Christ, Christ loved him, and will not refuse him. Hadst thou to die, Peter would not have commanded me to be confident. But he said, have confidence. No, Lygia. Christ will have mercy. He does not wish thy death. He will not permit it. I swear to thee by the name of the Redeemer that Peter is praying for thee. Silence followed. The one candle hanging above the entrance went out, but moonlight entered through the whole opening. In the opposite corner of the cellar a child whined and was silent. From outside came the voices of Praetorians, who, after watching their turnout, were playing under the wall at script duodecim. O Marcus, said Lygia, Christ himself called to the Father, remove this bitter cup from me. Still he drank it. Christ himself died on the cross, and thousands are perishing for his sake. Why, then, should he spare me alone? Who am I, Marcus? I have heard Peter say that he too would die in torture. Who am I, compared with Peter? When the Praetorians came to A, I dreaded death and torture, but I dread them no longer. See what a terrible prison this is, but I am going to heaven. Think of it. Caesar is here, but there the Redeemer, kind and merciful. And there is no death there. Thou lovest me. Think, then, how happy I shall be. Oh, dear Marcus, think that thou wilt come to me there. Here she stopped to get breath in her sick breast, and then raised his hand to her lips. Marcus? What, dear one? Do not weep for me, and remember this, thou wilt come to me. I have lived a short time, but God gave thy soul to me. Hence I shall tell Christ, that though I died, and thou wert looking at my death, though thou wert left in grief, thou didst not blaspheme against his will, and that thou lovest him always. Thou wilt love him, and endure my death patiently? For then he will unite us. I love thee, and I wish to be with thee. Breath failed her then, and in a barely audible voice she finished. Promise me this, Marcus. Vinicius embraced her with trembling arms, and said, by thy sacred head, I promise. Her pale face became radiant in the sad light of the moon, and once more she raised his hand to her lips, and whispered, I am thy wife. Beyond the wall the Praetorians playing scriptae duodecim raised a louder dispute, but Vinicius and Lygia forgot the prison, the guards, the world, and, feeling within them the souls of angels, they began to pray. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.